Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Pop Life. We'll take you through all the goings-on in pop culture. Glad to have you aboard with us tonight. We do this show once a month. We talk movies, TV, maybe even books, music. Got so many things to talk about. Head on over to Facebook. You want to get involved? Like our page, Pop Life, over there on Facebook. Get involved in the conversation. There's so many things for us to talk about tonight, so let's get it. First off, got to introduce, obviously, Todd is on board tonight. Todd, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Ken. How are you?
Doing great. You know, I'm excited, actually, you know, just to let everyone know out there, I'm involved in something. It's kind of a labor of love, and, you know, if anyone's in the Rockland County area, May 31st, we're doing a benefit for the American Cancer Society, and exciting, you know, I've been involved in music and performing for quite a long time, and you know, been in a couple bands, but I started a new band called Dirty Martini, where we're doing kind of Sinatra era, Rat Pack era type music. Real excited just to do that kind of music. I mean, I don't know, singing like Sinatra, you just can't help but feel cool.
Yeah, it's got to feel great, and it's a very cool idea. This is a great thing you're doing. Departure, I've seen you perform in a number of different bands, and this is not like anything you've done before.
Yeah, I'm kind of pumped. I mean, it's, again, for the American Cancer Society, and I've worked on the Relay for Life every year for a few years now. And you know, interestingly enough, my grandmother, who passed away from colon cancer, when she passed away, I inherited her vinyl collection.
Oh, nice.
And so for years, I've always enjoyed this genre. I just never thought, like, it would be really cool to perform it, and then just one day a light bulb went off and was like, hey, you know, let's do a benefit with Dirty Martini. So that's May 31st, Congers, New York, Peppermill South, and the cool thing is that the Peppermill has agreed to allow 20% of all food and drink sales will go to the American Cancer Society Relay for Life. There'll be a few raffles going on. The raffles, 100% of the monies will be going to the Relay for Life. And us, Dirty Martini, we're not getting paid for the gig, so we're just we're there performing, entertaining the masses, and we're encouraging people, look, whatever you have, come on by, but we're encouraging. You know, black tie is encouraged. Come on and embrace the era of, you know, when people would go out and they dress up. We just want to have that cool vibe of yesteryear. And, you know, it's neat because we're doing, you know, oldies like that. We're doing some Sinatra, Ray Charles, Patsy Cline, stuff like that. But we're doing a new take on some newer songs. So we're just kind of getting that vibe. And one of the songs that I've always kind of thought kind of captures that feel of that era, New York State of Mind. And there are a few Billy Joel songs that kind of capture that. And we're doing that song, which I'm excited about. And as luck would have it, with Billy Joel doing his concert thing, you got to go see Billy Joel at the Garden recently. I would love to hear your review and your take on Billy Joel at the Garden.
Well, you know, I love Billy Joel. When we discussed this a few months ago, you know, I mentioned I'm a big fan. I've seen him in concert a few times. You said you're a fan, if I recall correctly, you're a fan of Billy Joel's greatest hits. You don't know a lot of the albums, the you know, deep cuts, but you love what you hear. You would have loved this concert, too. I guess, you know, he hasn't put out a new album since 1991 or so. At that point, when you tour... I'm just going to wait for this little technical question.
I think we're okay now. All right, there was kind of an echo going on, but it's cool. You got to hear like what you were saying twice, but
yeah, it was just that important. you know, there's no new album to promote, so you're doing a lot of greatest hits. And I was looking forward to hearing some of the other stuff. I think it was the best of both worlds. First of all, I've got to say it was Billy's 65th birthday, so I knew we were in for something special. I didn't know exactly what, but we had a nice opening act. Gavin DeGraw came out, did 45 minutes. So he was very good. Howard Stern came out. Howard Stern, who, you know, used to be very divisive. I think he's now a lot more mainstream with age and with his whatever show he's on as a judge now, America's Got Talent. And he said that Billy Joel approached him and said that he wanted to donate all of the proceeds from this show last Friday to the North Shore Animal League, a major animal shelter around here, which I thought was amazing. Billy Joel got easily a dozen songs off of his Greatest Hits album, and he, I guess with age, again, some people have to mellow out a little bit. The fact that he plays piano makes it easy for him to get by doing the same thing. High energy, but he doesn't have to run around the stage or anything. Put on a terrific show, did all of the hits you'd love to hear, some of the ones, you know, even from Greatest Hits that I really wanted him to play, like The Ballad of Billy the Kid, The Entertainer, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant. But I went into this thinking, all right, there are three songs that are not on his Greatest Hits album that I would love to hear, and I lucked out. He did two of them, which I've been to concerts with you, Ken, a long time ago, where I said to you, man, I hope this guy plays just this one song. And it was a big hit, and he didn't play it. Like, how does this happen? We went to see Phil Collins.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah. And I said, all I want him to do for me is I wish it would rain down. And it was like a major hit within the past 6 months, and he didn't do the song.
No, it was that tour.
It was that tour. It was a recent hit. So Billy Joel did Zanzibar and Sometimes a Fantasy, which are two of my favorites.
Oh, nice.
Jimmy Fallon came out partway through, did a little barbershop quartet thing, did a duet with Billy, sang Happy Birthday. It was just overall a terrific night. You know, I started the night thinking, I don't want to sing along. I want to sit here and just take it in. And by the end, I was up. I was singing. The whole crowd was. So a terrific show. Yeah, all in all, great. I recommend it. You know, I think he's sold out for the year, but he's going to keep playing the Garden once a month. So get your tickets. Check it out.
And that's high praise. I got to tell you something, and Todd and I have known each other for quite some time, and I have found, and it's great you're getting high praise, but I have had a difficult time over the years because my first concert, and I'm not sure if it was yours, but we were there, but my first concert was Michael Jackson. And it's been like one of those things where, you know, I'll go to see shows and people are like, oh, that's a great show. And I'm like,
That first high, right? You never live up to that first high.
Yeah, exactly. It's like being a heroin addict. It's like every concert. There have been a few that have been, you know, I've seen Prince a number of times and he's, you know, he's amazing. And I've seen some great shows.
Right.
But he really set the bar kind of high. Yeah. Do you find yourself, you know, having seen him and I, over the years now, especially since he's passed away, I have kind of gotten to the point where, like, I'm very thankful, and I never thought it before, but I'm very lucky because there's a lot of people that I'll say, oh, yeah, I saw Michael, and they're like, oh, my God, really? You're so – so a lot of people didn't get a chance to see him live. He didn't do a number of solo tours.
That was his last North American tour. So that was it. That was the last chance you had to see him. And, I agree. The bar was set very high. I had seen a few shows before. My first concert, actually, was Whitney Houston. And she set the bar pretty damn low. She sang, she sang like Whitney Houston sings. It was great. But was no show. She was standing in the middle of what was then Brendan Byrne Arena in the Meadowlands in Jersey. on a small circular stage with no instruments, no set, no effect on it. It was just her singing. And look, that's what she does best, but that's at the bar kind of low. And then a couple of concerts later, I'm watching Michael on the Bad Tour. Oh, man. I mean, really, I'd say maybe Billy and Elton face-to-face, that was a tremendous concert. And, you know, a couple of other Billy Joel shows. There have been some others that have really been top in my top five, but I don't know if anything really can compare to the Michael Jackson concert.
But it's kind of cool, like knowing that we're the types that, you know, kind of set the bar high, and then you know, we can kind of be critical. Like you're definitely wholeheartedly 100% recommending go see Billy Joel.
Absolutely, the guy puts on a hell of a show. A lot of people tour now, you know, with their greatest hits. You know, you can go see the Rolling Stones or Bruce Springsteen, and I'm sure they put on a great show too. And the other thing is, you know, when we were kids, up until I really stopped seeing concerts all the time, a concert was $30.
Yeah.
That's what every concert, you're like, is it 27 or is it 30? That was it. And now it's a hell of an expensive ticket. This was worth the money. It was a great concert, and I'd put it up there in my top ones. Got to go see Billy Joel if you get the chance.
That's fine. You know, we got the summer concert season coming up, so hopefully we'll see some more that we can talk about on the show. And, you know, sometimes, like you're saying, concert tickets are expensive, but sometimes, you know, you catch, like, a cheaper show somewhere. And, like, a few years back, I saw ZZ Top, and they were amazing. And I never would have thought it's a cheaper show at Jones Beach. And those guys don't change. They're the beards and the sunglasses.
They
so, like, I didn't think it would be, like, a show I would love, and I absolutely loved seeing them. And this year I'm excited because I'm going to see Kiss for the first time. So I will be excited to be on this show and give you a Kiss review. And I'm actually going to see the Monkees. I've always dug the Monkees, so I'm excited to go and see them perform.
Now, Ken, you were there, right, when we saw Davy Jones?
Yes!
The free Davy Jones concert for the 4th of July
at
fireworks.
At Clarkstown South.
Yes, and that was a fun concert. We saw some good 4th of July fireworks shows. But the Monkees, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Yeah, it's funny because I have a cassette somewhere autographed by Davy Jones.
Right.
Like, I just brought my Then and Now cassette and got him to sign it. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I got into it when the Monkees did, like, their revival on MTV. I was pretty into them, and I'm excited to go see them. So hopefully over the course of the summer, you know, we'll see a couple of shows and we'll be able to bring you some concert reviews and let you know if it's worth the money or not. But that's cool, though. I'm glad you had a good time. Because that's the worst when you go to a concert and you're like, why did I spend the money?
Right. Yeah. It's infrequent. It's, you know, something you've said about going to the movies. You go with the mindset that you're going to have a good time, and almost always you will have a good time. So, you know, when that doesn't work out, it's a real shame. Concerts are a hell of a lot more of an expense and a commitment than going to a movie. So this one won't let you down.
And that's a good point, you know, when you talk about it. And I've always said this, that, you know, there are very few movies that I don't enjoy because I do go there with that attitude. And if I went back in my movie career and movies that really just, you know, maybe there wasn't a lot of substance, but it just made me feel good.
Right.
At the end of the movie, just kind of entertained me and you know, walked out of the theater with a smile on my face. If I actually sat down and enlisted those movies that had done that for me, two of the movies that quite possibly would be on the list would be Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Hook.
Oh, right.
You know, both those movies, I walked out smiling from ear to ear, a lot of fun. And unfortunately, we now mourn the passing of Bob Hoskins, who passed away since we did the last show. A rather accomplished actor.
Yes.
Over the years, had a 40-plus year career in England and in the States. TV in England, lots of movies. You know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was one of those movies that, I mean, everyone remembers that. Everyone remembers, you know, seeing it. Everyone remembers Jessica. You know, it's one of those great movies that combine live action and animation. He was always one of those guys that, even, you know, at times he was in movies that he played a villain, or, you know, in Nixon he played J. Edgar Hoover.
Right.
But he was a guy that was eminently likable. There's just something about him, and he was, you know, when I heard he passed away, it was just kind of, you know, it was sad because I just thought he was just one of those guys you just – you just liked him.
Yeah,
so
he was
it's
that, that everyman type of guy, and not just, you know, look, he was a British actor. I don't think anyone knew it when we first saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because he played that, that gruff American type so well.
Yeah, he definitely was one of those guys that, like, when you saw him in an interview, you were like, no!
Right, exactly. Who Framed Roger Rabbit itself was groundbreaking and certainly was his breakout role and probably in the end his most memorable. It, for me, it revived, not that I had lost it, you know, I was probably 16 or so at the time, so it's not like I had stopped watching cartoons for that long, but it revived my interest in what animation could be, because that combination of the two was incredible. And I remember Hook very well and said, hey, there's that guy from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And then, unfortunately, he did the Super Mario Brothers movie. And you said, well, he could do Italian too. Okay. you know, that thing was, well, kind of the footnote. We don't need to mention that one in his career. Of course, I just did, because that's what I do.
But I remember when he was in the movie Unleashed with Jet Li.
Okay.
And he played a villain, and he was just kind of like this vicious loan shark type character, and he, you know, he was a guy that just, you know, he was that chameleon actor that,
right,
even though he had a very specific look, you know, he's a guy, like you're saying, he could do Italian, and even though I'm not putting that movie up as one of the best movies,
right,
of all time, he could nail it, you know, he could give you, what accent do you need, what kind of character do you need, and he could just do it, and saddened by the loss of a guy like Bob Hoskins.
And he could do gruff in any accent pretty well.
Very good.
You know, another unfortunate loss recently was not as well known by name, but his work was certainly very well known. Al Feldstein was the editor of Mad Magazine from the 50s or 60s through the 1980s, which covers pretty much when we would have read the magazine, and probably a lot of our listeners as well. This guy oversaw the rise of Mad from, you know, something very small. I think it increased 8 to 10 times in circulation, and he hired all of those writers whose names you probably remember, Don Martin, Mort Drucker, Angelo Torres, and Dave Berg. And he saw this magazine, you know, to the rise to what it was. And it was an important part of our childhood. It was one of the few things that I read on a regular basis when I was, you know, a preteen, teenage years. I loved it. Did you read Mad Magazine?
Of course. I mean, it was just one of those things. I remember it being one of those magazines that my parents didn't like, which made it all the more enticing. And, yeah, it just, you know, it's one of those things that it's, I think for a lot of kids, without even knowing it, it could very well have been your first exposure to satire.
Right.
And the way it was written, it's, you know, you don't realize it again as a kid, but just brilliant stuff, you know, brilliant stuff, the way they, and, you know, nothing was off limits when it came to Mad Magazine, and it just, it was, it's a staple in America pop culture.
Yeah, you would get every issue two or three of those parodies of TV and movies. I remember there was always one in the beginning, one in the end, and they were very, you know, you read a lot. There were a lot of words.
Yeah, there were a lot of words.
But it was hilarious.
Words.
The Beavis and Butthead reference, ladies and gentlemen. There was a lot, you know, I mean, there was other stuff in Mad, too, that was the cartoons. I even loved the stuff that was drawn in the margins, which was another one of his creations, or one of his hirees, at least. Speaking of satire and parody, though, you know, there are certain things going on in pop culture now that I have exposure to because I live with three kids, and not everyone is aware of. One of the funniest things that I've seen in the past year, on a regular basis, a recurring thing, has been on Sesame Street. Now, anyone who has watched Sesame Street even once as an adult probably realized there was a lot more going on there than you recalled as a kid. They always put in a lot of stuff for adults, but what they did in the past year was Cookie Monster got a recurring thing where he would do a parody of a movie, and, you know, it would teach something to the kids. But it was under the guise of Crumbly Pictures, and he did such hilarious things, you know, 5 minutes or so, but he was Secret Agent Double Stuff 7 in The Spy Who Loved Cookies. And, you know, in the end, he saw that the Queen's crown was made of cookies and tackled her, basically. But there was some great stuff. He was Captain Snack Sparrow. The Biscotti Kid, which was great, one of my favorite movies. The Hunger Games, one of the funniest. This was done really well. They did a Les Mis thing, and he played Jean Bon Bon. And they did some great songs, some terrific parodies of the songs. So that was a lot of fun. It's the kind of thing that not everyone gets exposure to. But you know what? Go to PBS.com, YouTube. I guarantee you'll laugh if you check those out. So this is my second recommendation of the night. Billy Joel, Cookie Monster, and Crummy Pictures. Check them out.
Yeah, and you know, and speaking of that, though, you know, I guess you can't really, you know, overstate how much of an influence a guy like Al Feldstein had on our society as far as satire. And you just, you know, you can trace back to Mad Magazine and probably see the roots taking hold for Mad Magazine and spawning out in all forms of entertainment, whether it being print or TV or movies. And,
right.
You know, as we move into, you know, satirical, you know, now you got a lot of and Mad Magazine would hit politics. But there's a lot of like satirical political shows that continue to pop up. And now with a Steve Colbert
right. Really
moving into the mainstream now, big times for Steve Colbert.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he's taking over for David Letterman. We've had a lot of shakeups in late night TV. We discussed what was going on over on NBC. Now CBS is, you know, undergoing the same transformation. And it's an interesting choice for a replacement. You know, I've watched The Daily Show, The Colbert Report, much less since I had kids. You know, there's time for only so much, but I like to catch it when I can. And Stephen Colbert, his personality on the show is a satirical personality of this, you know, the right-wing TV pundit. That's who we've seen on The Colbert Report. They are taking not Stephen Colbert, the character, but Stephen Colbert, the actual person, and putting him in charge of one of the, you know, staples of American late night TV, the 11:30 slot on CBS. Do you think that that's a risk? You know, will people tune in and be surprised at who the real Stephen Colbert is? Do you think that parts of his old persona will seep in?
I think there has to be. I mean, I'd be shocked if he's a completely different person than the character. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be aspects of it. It's definitely a risk. I mean, it's, you know, he's got a unique voice. To be honest with you, I never really watched him regularly, but whenever I saw him, I found him funny. And I don't know why. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, I can't tell you how many times I probably said, I should just sit and watch the Colbert Report, but I didn't. But I'd see him in interviews. I'd laugh when I'd see the way he conduct himself. You know, they'd play audio from his shows or him, you know, being on The Daily Show, and they'll play it on the radio, and they're like, oh, listen to this. And I'd laugh when but for some reason I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to watch the show. So it's different. I think there'll be aspects of it. I think it's a good thing. Well, it's a double-edged sword. It's a good thing, or it could be a very bad thing. They're definitely setting it up where they have brought someone in who is completely different than a Jimmy Fallon.
Right.
So to compete with, it's, well, if you don't like Jimmy Fallon, there's a definitive alternative. It's not like they're – I mean, you could say that Leno and Letterman were different, but they kind of had similar styles to them. You know
right. What
I mean? Like, if you liked one, I couldn't see really absolutely hating the other.
Okay.
But these two have much different styles. Now, does that come back to bite them in the ass and more people like Jimmy Fallon's style so nobody goes to Colbert? Who knows? But it's a risk-reward kind of thing. I think it's an interesting move, but remains to be seen if he's able to find an audience.
You know, he was paired with Jon Stewart, and it was an ideal pairing because you had both sides of the political spectrum within that hour. He can't take that position now because it'll be too, you know, it'll split the audience, so he has to be a little more mainstream. But, yeah, still different from Jimmy Fallon. It's not like whoever they hire at 12:30. And, by the way, if you hadn't heard, Craig Ferguson is leaving his show as well. I don't know if they've made a hire at 12:30 yet. but it's not like you can rely on someone to balance him out an hour later. It's not like that block that Comedy Central had. So, you know, he will have to be more mainstream, but still, like you said, it'll be very different than Fallon. You know, one of the funniest things he used to do on the show was when he did his monologue and his little segments, but when he interviewed a guest, I loved that the guest was already seated, and Stephen Colbert would get up from his chair, run over, pumping his fist in the air, congratulating himself to go and meet with the guest every single episode. That was one of the greatest things that he did. I don't think we'll get to see some of the things that he did on his show in the same way that Jimmy Fallon was able to bring elements of his old later show to an earlier time slot. I don't think we'll get to see any of those things because it was too specific to the character of Stephen Colbert.
And the thing with Stephen Colbert that I wonder about, there's something about Jimmy Fallon that's eminently likable.
Yeah.
He just is a likable dude, and he's got a unique style. He's got a quirky kind of comedic style, but, you know, he's a guy who could bring on an app and do a barbershop thing with Billy Joel, or he's doing a lip sync thing with Emma Stone, or, you know, he does with other people. I mean, and he's a guy that is able to mesh into, you know, interviewing different people. Like with someone like Colbert, I mean, I look at Colbert as an intellect.
Right.
I look at him as a really bright guy. You know, when he's, you know, on the show and you know, Justin Bieber's booked as a guest or someone, you know, some teenage pop star, like, is he going to be able to morph his style and not talk down to people that maybe he's not a fan of? You know, I'm really curious to see, you know, like you're saying, the real Steve Colbert as opposed to the character Steve Colbert, where his interview style will fall. Because, you know, like you're saying, politically he's got to play it down the middle. But if there's a celebrity that is very likable, and in some way, shape, or form, Colbert comes off as talking down to this person,
right,
that could kill him. I mean, that's something that could wind up being polarizing really fast. And, you know, you kind of need that likability factor that a Jimmy Fallon has. And Fallon was much different than Leno and is a very likable guy. And I think that's why his show, at least I'm enjoying it, and I think the show is working. It'd be interesting to see, you know, how Colbert fares in the late night wars, but definitely a very unique choice.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is David Letterman, if you gave him reason to, he would talk down to you when you were his guest, but if you gave him reason. But, you know, he more recently turned into just kind of the cranky old guy type of host, and he earned the right to do what he did. Colbert, you know, he'll have to earn his stripes, and I'd like to see what type of guest he gets. You know, this is not it's not Tom Snyder or Charlie Rose. You know, he's got that prime slot at 11:30. So let's see where that goes. And by the way, just to fill in the blanks here, Larry Wilmore, who is a correspondent on The Daily Show, is now taking over the Stephen Colbert slot and will be doing his take on things. He was, quote, the senior black correspondent on The Daily Show. He's doing something with that edge at 11:30. So, again, it'll still be something to kind of offset Jon Stewart, but, you know, in a different way than Stephen Colbert did, I'm assuming.
And as the shakeups continue in late-night TV and people are leaving and coming and going, just Todd and I are available. So you need something late night, something to fill up, you know. We could probably be at least as bad as half the people that have gotten shows on TV.
And we'll go on at 2:30.
Well, will, yeah. We're willing to go on whatever time you want. But, you know, as I was talking about Steve Colbert and, like, guests and you know, where how he talks and you know, obviously, as and this is what we call a segue. But, you know, he's going to have to talk a lot about superheroes. It just remains to be seen.
Hell of a segue, Ken.
Isn't that nice? You see what I did there? But he's going to have to take the subject matter seriously.
Yeah.
And as we, like, rockily segue into this, our next talking point, it's interesting that, you know, maybe not as far as the writings. You know, I don't follow comic books as religiously as I used to. Every so often I pull out, you know, I'll grab a graphic novel or I'll follow a series. You know, a lot of times they're hit or miss. So I'm not going to say it's a golden age of comics, but I definitely think we're in the golden age of comic book movies, if not the golden age of live action or media driven, you know, because TV is following suit now, and you have comic book stuff just popping up everywhere. And just to let you guys know, we're not going to dissect fully, but, you know, Captain America just come out.
Right.
We have X-Men Days of Future Past coming out, and the summer movie season is getting underway, and you guys want to tune in this Sunday at 7:30, right?
7 o'clock.
I get confused. 7 o'clock, we're going to give you our take on the upcoming summer movie season. That's, again, this Sunday at 7 o'clock. Jump on your computers. We're going to be talking summer movies for 90 minutes, so definitely tune in on Sunday. But getting back to, like, you know, comic book stuff, I mean, it's pretty incredible what's going on right now as far as comic book TV shows, comic book movies. We got a lot of movies coming out. And one of the things that was interesting today,
yep,
revealed the new Bat suit and Batmobile. You can't really see as much of the Batmobile as you can see the Bat suit. As much as, to me, I'm still not happy about Ben Affleck. I thought the suit looked kind of cool.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I'd like to get your take on the suit, but as Batman, you know, it's kind of exploding right now. The new Bat suit, the new Batmobile, and we have seen the first trailers for the new TV series, Gotham, which looks phenomenal to me. I mean, I couldn't have asked for more from the trailer. That got me pretty excited. So right there, one of the most iconic comic book heroes out there, we're getting a lot right now, and we're going to get to see the backstory behind everything that happened in Gotham before Batman even existed.
Yeah, that looked very cool. And just, you know, I thought that the bat suit looked good. I never doubted that Affleck would look good in the bat suit. I don't know how he'll be as a Bruce Wayne. I don't know how he'll act as a Batman, but I thought he'd at least have the jawline, the look to be Batman. And I like the look of this suit. The Batmobile itself, though, looked cool to me. It looked like a kind of a cross between the Batmobiles that we saw in the the 89 movie with Nicholson and Keaton, the ones in the 90s, and what we saw Christian Bale driving. Because the Christian Bale Batmobiles were not really the Batmobile to me. They looked like something else entirely. This one looks more like that sleek lines, you know, the fins and the – it looks like the Batmobile as I remember it, and I enjoyed seeing that.
I totally agree with you. Like, it's funny. I actually said that. We were talking about it at work, and I, you know, I said that's – they took, like, the best of both worlds.
Right.
Because the thing is also in that – the old series, the 89 through whatever year when Joel Schumacher completely effed it up.
Yeah.
The Batmobile got ridiculous. I mean, by the end, the Batmobile had a fin that looked like it was 100 feet in the air. It just got so far away from being functional and just was so stylized. I liked the first Batmobile, the first Michael Keaton movie. I thought it was cool looking. It was sleek. It was Batmobile looking, but it was efficient looking as well.
Right.
You know, that the newer Batmobile was more from Dark Knight Returns. There was a all-terrain, you know, vibe to it, which I really liked. But you're right. I the first thing I thought of when I saw that picture was, wow, they kind of combined the two. And it looked neat. I'm trying to be optimistic. It's tough. I keep going back to when they cast Heath Ledger. I hated the casting. I despised the casting. And he was amazing as the Joker. So I'm holding on to that, but I'm hoping, all right, I hate the casting of Ben Affleck, but maybe he'll be good.
It's great how what you perceived as bad casting in the past, and not just Heath Ledger, but I'm sure a couple of the other ones as well, can give you hope that someone else,
yeah,
you think really bad, might be good, because it's happened before. But, you know, I think a lot of people are hoping beyond hope that that's the case. Certainly we're not going to see the Batmobile in the Gotham show. We will see the evolution of some of the more well-known villains, some of the lesser-known people. I don't know if they're all directly from the comics or not, as well as, you know, who the focus seems to be is Commissioner Gordon and little Bruce Wayne as well. I did notice, and I noted this omission in the past, but the trailer I saw, correct me if I'm wrong, mentions a lot of the villains we know, but not the Joker.
Yeah, I think they're gonna hold off on that
right.
for a while and then see, that'll be, maybe that sweeps week, we'll see, it's so intriguing, and you know, it's funny, because there are characters that aren't from the comic books that they've added to the show, and I'm okay with that.
Right.
I've gotten, you know, I'm a comic book fan, I've been for quite some time, and there was a time where, like, you know, I'd see a comic book movie, and they'd change something, and I'd be like, how can you do that? Come on, it's not true, but... Man, they rewrite things in the comics. You know, they'll change someone's origin out of nowhere. Hell, the Incredible Hulk was gray. Then he was green. So the comic books can change things. You know, other mediums can change things as well. You know, as long as they stay true to the character. The one thing that I really liked when I saw the trailer of Gotham and how they were treating the material, number one, it looked like it was being treated seriously. And number two... Where I think they're going in a good direction where Smallville, like a similar type show, completely lost its direction is, you know, you kind of were watching Superman. And it kind of got frustrating at times, like, why is he not flying? Or why is he not doing, you know, when is he going to actually put the goddamn suit on? I mean, he's got all... Whereas Gotham takes that completely out of the equation.
Yeah.
He's a kid. He's a kid going through the death of his parents. I mean, when Gotham starts off, I mean, a very, very young Bruce Wayne, if the show is successful, I mean, they're not obligated to have, like, a quote-unquote Batman show up, like, until 10 years down the road a piece.
Right.
So that means the show is incredibly successful. And if – I mean, I hope the show is great. I hope it stays true to the material. And in all honesty, I hope it has a tremendous run. And the series finale, years down the road, is Gordon and Batman meeting for the first time on the top of a roof, and that's it. We end right there, and they don't even go into Batman at all. We just totally see everything else that happened before Bruce Wayne decided to be Batman.
Fox execs, if you're listening, Ken has just ended the show for you 10, 12 years in the future. I think it's an outstanding idea, so take note. You know the last scene right now, but we don't know what's going to happen in the 10 years
exactly.
in between. But I think that's a great idea. I could see it in my head already. You know, I want to talk a little bit more about comics on TV, but you mentioned something about how in the comic book world, things can change. And that brings up something that it's another story, and it's comics only. It's not an adaptation, but it's in the comics. And the story itself kind of disturbed me just because of how much I know things change. You are a little bit more involved in the comic book world itself, not just the adaptations, even though it might not be to the degree you were at one point. I'm referring to the story recently that Marvel Comics is going to be killing off Wolverine in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. That might be one of the biggest stories to come out of comic book world. And it is amazing because, you know, it's a story that in the comic book world are probably dominating things. But like I said, we're in kind of a golden era of comic books. And you know, there's so many people out there. I mean, Arrow is so successful. There's S.H.I.E.L.D. on television. There's, you know, Gotham coming up. The movies, the Batsuit. I mean, there's so many things that are taking people's attention. So I do feel on some levels that the death of Wolverine has kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. But, yeah, I mean, the stories we're hearing right now is Wolverine is going to lose his healing ability, and at some point it's going to lead to his death. Now, it's comic books, and, you know, heroes have died before, and some way, shape, or form they get resurrected. So I highly doubt it will be the last time we see Wolverine. What I found intriguing about this is I had read some stories that years ago, before the first Wolverine movie came out, that Marvel rushed to do a Wolverine Origins because they wanted to make sure that the definitive origin story came out in the comic books
okay.
before it was addressed in the movies. And what I found intriguing, and this is just me purely speculating, when you got a guy like Hugh Jackman, who has played Wolverine, and now he's going to be in X-Men Days of Futures Past, there's talk of another Wolverine standalone movie, as well as another sequel to this X-Men movie. I think when I started counting it up, counting the movies that would come out, he's going to wind up playing the character upwards of 9 films.
Well, I mean, that's really defining that character.
Yes, and that's something that's unheard of. I was talking with a group here. We were trying to figure out, like, actors that have played one character for that many movies, and it was really difficult to come up with anybody who had played, like, the same character for that many movies. And, you know, we're like trying to think, well, when the Star Wars movies comes out, is Anthony Daniels like and Peter Mayhew, well, not Peter Mayhew, but Anthony Daniels and Kenny Baker, because they were in the other 6.
Maybe Sean Connery is Bond. I don't know how many
I don't think he made that many. So it's definitely Hugh Jackman's in rarefied air.
Yeah.
Now, for someone who is so identified with that character, could we, and again, this is my brain going purely speculation, but are we looking at perhaps a Death of Wolverine movie, and Marvel wanted to get out there and make sure that they put out a Death of Wolverine story before the movie comes out? Again, you have the X-Men movie coming out now. Supposedly they're going to do another sequel coming out of this movie and another Wolverine standalone movie. You know, when that Wolverine standalone movie comes out, could we be looking at a Death of Wolverine?
I think I see where you're going. I see your point. And I don't know, you know, and if the comics come first, doesn't necessarily mean that the movie has to do the story the way the comic books have done the story. It just means that the comic books have set the standard first. This is what the canonical story is. Whether a movie does it the same way or not, I don't know. And, you know, my other take on this is, maybe the reason that the story has not gotten the attention that so much else in the comic book world has on TV and the movies and in the pages themselves is because we know that superheroes get resurrected. I don't know how often this happened before the big Death of Superman storyline all those years ago, but, you know, obviously he came back. I think that probably the true comic book fans knew that he would come back. I would be surprised if this is the last you see of Wolverine, and therefore announcing, well, here's our big story, Wolverine's going to die, is not really such a big story after all. It's a story we're going to tell. It's a big and interesting story, but it's not like this is the end of the character.
It's one of those things, it's a really good point you bring up. It's really where they go from that point on. You know, the death of Superman, the story in and of itself, was okay. It wasn't great. It was okay. But that was actually the beginning of the end of me following comic books regularly, because I got so annoyed where coming out of that, they created 4 Supermen, 3 of which were being speculated that could be the resurrected Superman. And then the 4 of them got 4 separate titles. So to follow the aftermath of the death of Superman, you had to buy the 4 titles, and then Superman like came back fairly quickly. And when I remember reading an article when they said they were going to kill Superman, and one of the writers at DC said, we really want to explore what the world without a Superman would be like. And they really didn't do that. And it wound up being a colossal waste of time, and it was just almost like a cheap way to sell comic books. We'll kill off Superman. Everyone will be like, oh, my God, the death of Superman. And then we'll bring him back real quickly, and we'll just keep going the way we're going. So I think you're right. This will wind up being a significant story perhaps after the fact. Okay. If we're in January 2015 and Wolverine's still dead, you know, and they gave us a few, like, solid months of Wolverine not being around anymore and the X-Men having to deal without having Wolverine and emotionally how they're getting past Wolverine being gone, then it's cool. Then it's iconic. If we see Wolverine resurrected a month after they kill him off, then it's like, yeah, it was a smash-and-grab publicity gimmick. The other thing also, you know, when you come to Wolverine, and maybe this is another reason it's overlooked, You know, the X-Men have kind of found themselves a little bit separate from this universe, this multimedia universe that Marvel has been created, which has really been centered around the Avengers.
Right.
And, you know, interestingly enough, you have the Avengers movies, you have Captain America that was out this year, and they've gone into television, and they have brought us the Shield, which to me has been spotty at best. It's been hit or miss, some really good episodes, some but as we go into next season, the Shield has been renewed for another year.
Very happy to see the Shield is coming back. I agree that early on, episode to episode, you never knew what you were going to get. I've really enjoyed the last couple of months. You know, they've blown up the Shield organization. I'm assuming that, you know, those of you who know, and I've just heard the name, but, you know, Hydra has reared its head, or heads, as the case may be. And we have trouble now within the Shield organization. If I'm not mistaken, the season finale may have just aired tonight. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they end up. But at least it's not the end. That has been picked up. You know, we have a lot of information now, a lot of news about shows that have been canceled, have been renewed. The networks are having their upfront, their meetings this week, their presentations at the upfronts about what their schedules are going to be. So we even have the schedules for next fall, tentatively, for ABC, Fox, and NBC, as well as a full list of what shows have been canceled and what shows are coming back. So like I said, I'm very happy to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. returning, because it was one of those shows on the bubble. We didn't know where it would go. Revolution, which is a show that Ken and I have both watched. I've kept up more, but we both have a backlog on our DVRs at this point. That is out, and I'm now making the decision whether to finish the season or not. But that's one of the shows that I'm certainly going to... Now, I don't want to say the word miss. It's a show I watched regularly that is canceled. Luckily, I didn't have too many of those. Community is another one, but I felt like that one had a lucky second life this season. But on the networks, at least, I did pretty well. Revolution and Community are the two shows, two NBC shows, that I watched regularly that will not be back. How did you do, Ken?
I lost a couple. I mean, I'm you know, with the Shield, I'm kind of hoping that it gets better. You know, it's funny. I think it's moving in a good direction, but I do wonder, you know, can this show succeed for years? But I'm glad it's coming back. I lost Rake, which was very disappointing. I thought that was a really, really good mid-season replacement. Greg Kinnear was awesome. I lost The Crazy Ones, which is another show. Rake and The Crazy Ones were two shows that I really was disappointed, only because I thought it needed like that second season to really get its legs under them. I thought both shows were moving in really good direction. To me, The Crazy Ones evolved from a Robin Williams vehicle to an ensemble cast. The cast was very entertaining. For whatever reason, CBS really didn't market Brad Garrett being on the show, and he was great, and maybe for Robin Williams haters, that would have helped, like showing, hey, Brad Garrett's got a big part on the show. They brought on Pam Dauber as a guest star for one episode, which is awesome to see the reuniting of Mork and Mindy. So it was disappointing. I decided not to. The minute Revolution was canceled, I deleted the backlog on my DVR. It was getting tedious for me. So I was like, you know what? I decided it wasn't for me anymore, and I didn't see myself sitting through all of them. And God forbid there was like a cliffhanger. I was like, you know what? I'm not putting myself through it.
I'm hoping that they had that inkling well enough in advance that we don't get a cliffhanger if I continue to watch the shows.
Just the power goes back on, and everyone's fine.
That's
and
it.
Government's
yeah.
back. Power's back on. Ding.
You know, with The Crazy Ones, I put that in a category with a couple of other shows, a couple of NBC sitcoms. Also not returning are The Michael J. Fox Show and Sean Saves the World. Now, differing levels of sitcom star, but certainly three major previous sitcom stars, and none of them are coming back. So You know, if anyone has any thoughts on their favorite shows being canceled, being renewed, please call in. Let us know what you think about the upcoming TV season, the announcements being made. Call us 347-838-9815 is the number. And, Ken, do we have someone on the line?
We do. And it's funny, before I get to – we have Pat on the line, but before we get to him, I forgot. I watched Michael J. Fox show, too, so I lost that one, too, which was – enjoyable but not great. You know, it was just I. You know, it's Michael J. Fox. I like MJF.
MJF. I gave MJF an episode, and I just found it not funny. It might have been a decent half hour of story, but I didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah, you're right. I just enjoyed them, but I didn't. I never really laughed. Let's go out to the phones. We got Pat on the line. Hey, Pat, what's going on?
Hey, guys, how you doing tonight? I'm really loving the show. I love comic talk. It's always enjoyable. I'm still a collector of comics, and I love that we live in an era where Hollywood loves making comic movies because it only benefits all of us. But one of the things that you said, Ken, about Gotham, I'm really looking forward to that show. And I'm with you. I like the ending years later to be where he and Gordon meet on the rooftop for the first time. But what I really want to get out of Gotham is I always consider Bruce Wayne, and therefore Batman, to be just as legitimately, in a way, criminally insane as all the criminals he deals with, except his moral compass seems to be on the side of most of society. And that's why Batman, in the end, is sort of the good guy, because he's, in a way, just as insane as the Joker or anybody, the case will be made, in my view. So
I'm thinking
when we watch Gotham, you know, it's got to start off where Bruce Wayne is tortured and wants revenge and angry and bitter. So I think this is a story-building show about where he develops the moral compass. And I'm looking forward to that. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
It's a good point. I mean, you being a comic book guy, have you read The Killing Joke?
I have to reread it. I haven't read it in a long time, but I've read so much Batman left and right. You know me from wrestling. I love comics. I'm not a detailed guy. I remember every single arc or storyline, but I have read that before.
Killing Joke, though, that book is so artistic, and a lot of the frames in that actually don't have any dialogue. So if you pick it up again, it'll probably take you all of 10 minutes to get through the whole graphic novel. But you bring up a really interesting point, because I bring up that comic book because that comic book, to me, was the definitive graphic novel that really showed Batman being like exactly what you said, just as insane as all the criminals. He just happens to be on the side of law. And that comic book really showed the similarities between Batman and the Joker. It's a very intriguing character study on the two of them. And that comic book was the first explanation on the Joker's origins. So it'd be interesting to see if Gotham follows suit with the Killing Joke, or if they go in a different direction. You know, much different than Nicholson's Joker, very different origin. But
right.
I encourage you to revisit that. But I agree with you. I would love to see a young Bruce Wayne conflicted, you know, with where he needs to go in his life. I mean, I think there's so many directions you can go with this. I would love if the show is successful, you know, to see at some point an older Bruce Wayne gone. You know, when he travels about the world, you know, you could go a season, half a season, with Bruce Wayne not even being on the show, and continue to explore Gordon and how Gordon is responding to Gotham. There's so many creative directions the show could go in, and I was very encouraged with what the trailer looked like.
Yeah, I was too. And like for me, I know this might be a stretch for some, but it's great because the moral compass of Batman, in a way, is not far off from the Punisher, where Punisher, he goes past the moral compass by by killing everybody left and right because they may be banned, where Batman stops at that notion. So there's something there that's in him that keeps him to where he can put his foot on the pedal and not struggle with not killing some of these guys, especially what he went through with his parents. So the show has so much potential that it's got me into it. Some of the movies I saw this summer, I saw Spider-Man, I saw Captain America. I really enjoyed both of them. The one thing I made to the lady in here, and I wondered what you guys both thought of it, was generally I like conflict movies. Like you said, I'm never a guy that ever saw a movie like the use Daredevil as the best example. I really like Daredevil, where most people hated it, because I'm cool with some story changes, modernization, because comics always are like that. But the one thing coming out very soon that I never like when they change, and I think it looks back the way it was, is the new Godzilla. And I know they launched the comics again with him and all that. I wonder what you guys thought of what you've seen so far of what's coming up in Godzilla. It looks like they're going back to the original look of him and things like that. I'm really excited for that, and I hope that takes off. And you know, all the merchandising and stuff comes back from it. What do you guys think of Godzilla?
I've enjoyed the trailer. I think that the character looks like a beast. Godzilla looks, although I think word came out in the last couple of days that the Japanese have complained that he looks fat because he's American. Yeah.
That's funny. But, that's hilarious. Well, maybe, well, that's why he's fat. He's got to, shed off a few pounds or something. That's hilarious. He looks fat from the trailer.
Yeah, he's just misunderstood. He's just trying to get a workout. You know, if a couple of buildings, a couple of cities are in the way, so be it. What do you think, Ken?
What I like, and I think we've seen this across the board with comic book movies, with and even going back, I almost look to see, it started with the X-Men with casting guys like Patrick Stewart, in a pivotal role. To me, what changed with these movies is they went and took the subject matter seriously. And they started casting good actors, and they started trying to write stories and just make not necessarily a good comic book movie, but a good movie that happens to be based on a comic book. You know, and the best example to me was the last Batman trilogy with Christian Bale. What struck me with the Godzilla was same thing. It looked like they were taking the subject matter seriously. Some of the scenes you saw with Bryan Cranston it is very dire. It is being looked at very much like as unrealistic as this is, but in a very serious way, what would happen if this actually happened to our society? When you see, a soldier saying goodbye to his wife, they're taking an absolute over-the-top, fictional, can-never-happen type subject matter, and they're kind of giving it a serious take. On top of that, I love the way Godzilla looked. Yeah. As a Godzilla fan, I mean, I there have been good ones, there have been bad ones, but I've always enjoyed Godzilla movies. And it's gotten me excited as a kid. There was one trailer I watched where I'm watching. I was like, oh, there's a new Godzilla trailer. Let me check it out. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching. I'm like, that's Rodan. That's Rodan. Did that Rodan?
Yeah,
Rodan.
Yeah.
Rodan just flew by. Rodan is in the movie. Got me like really pumped, so I'm hoping that the movie delivers on the trailer, but the trailer has gotten me really excited.
Yeah, and I'll throw one more your way now that you guys go. Like I said, I'm really enjoying this. I love when you do this show, Ken. You guys are really good together. Wolverine, The Death of Wolverine, I'm looking forward to that as well, because I find it's so compelling, the fall of him, the death of him, so to say, how the story told, how it ends. And you know how comics, we always can come back if we need to down the road or go into a different year. But I'm very excited for that. I'm a big Wolverine guy. And the last Wolverine movie that came out, most movies, like especially the Spider-Man that I just saw in Captain America, you look at it knowing there's usually a trilogy involved in it. The last Wolverine movie to me felt like I went to a comic store, I just bought a book, the next Wolverine issue is out, and it was a one story tell, and then next month his next issue will be out. That movie felt like a one story tell to me, the last Wolverine where he's in Japan and meeting up with the guy years later. That not many comic book movies now are told that way. It's mostly told where you know you're getting a set of three. So I really loved that, and thought it was a great movie. And where they go through the X-Men and stuff with Wolverine now, if they do explore the death of him, I think that would be great. I think it's compelling, and it's always good to see the mighty fall in the comic book series. And it's dramatic, usually puts over somebody else that will rise and get a nice rub from it as well, so to say. But I'm a big fan of that. I look forward to that as well.
I'm excited about that. So I'm curious, you know, before we let you go, because I have vowed that I have to go back and kind of catch up and binge watch this series because it didn't grab me initially. But when we're talking about comic book stuff out there, I know you're a big fan of Arrow.
You know, I lost my way with Arrow, and the reason why was I've been reading Arrow since Green Arrow and / Green Lantern since I was 6. That was like one of the first issues. I'm 41 now. And I love Green Arrow. I started watching it. A lot of guys we know and saw and such are all big fans of Arrow. But I can't get around Arrow as being, like, meant for guys, but also they want the 13 to 18-year-old girl and all the subsidies, some little things that come from that channel, that network, the market they're trying to reach. They make sure it's in there with the love stories going on, the requited love and all that. I tried and I couldn't latch on to Arrow. Everybody loves it. I don't know what I'm missing, except for the fact Oliver Queen, by the time I started reading him all these years, is so gruff and out there and a tough guy that him coming from a whiny, rich background and living through it, I can't live through it because I'm just not relating to the character of who I learned in the comic book. You guys like Arrow?
No, it's interesting. It didn't. Yeah, you know, I guess I was mistaken. I thought you were a fan. It never grabbed me. I wanted to. I gave it a chance early on. It really didn't get me. And then I decided, all right, you know, let me. I just stopped. And then so many people I know became fans. Like, yeah, maybe I should give it an attempt and watch like season one and season two. Todd, do you watch Arrow?
No, I don't watch Arrow, and I think because I do enjoy superhero television shows so much, I think I just have developed a CW bias. I think
that's a great point. Yeah.
I haven't started it. I didn't watch Supernatural, which is coming back. The Vampire Diaries and the spin-off The Originals, which are coming back. Arrow, which is coming back, which are all shows that I might otherwise have given a shot. And I think that I just have this subconscious bias against the network.
You know, I don't think you're wrong for having that, because if this makes sense, I feel Arrow is 90210 Arrow, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, it's so much drama. You know, a typical, let's stretch out the love story forever, and they love each other, but they can't say it type thing. You know, like you would see on Friends. You know what I mean? Like, we all know you love each other. We all know you can't kind of be with each other, but you want to be, and you're mad at each other. It has that element to it where that's not Oliver Queen to me. This Oliver Queen I don't like. It was very hard to like that show, but I think you hit the nail on the head. So they generally don't like superhero shows from CW, which is why Fox and Gotham I can't wait to see. But I think they'll do a better job with it. But your bias is correct, and you know, I never liked Smallville. I don't know why. It's just like trying to appeal to the girls that are, you know, 12 to 18, as well as grabbing that guy audience on the CW, I think it really takes away from the comics that I read all my life.
Yeah, it's just the other shows that they've had on the air, you know, really, it's not like this bias coming from nowhere. It's what their general programming has been. Although they always have had these other maybe shows aimed at a different audience sprinkled in there, and I just haven't picked up on them.
Yeah, and you can tell by the commercials sometimes. They have, like, you know, the Revlon eyeliner commercials mixed in with the typical stuff on that network, and I just think the show reflects that. I think Arrow's too pretty, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect
sense. The whole idea of it, you know what I mean?
We're sitting here talking. I'm figuring out this is why I didn't like Arrow. I didn't realize it, because I'm thinking, I should like this. It's a comic book show. You know, it looked interesting, and it just wasn't resonating. And as we're throwing around ideas here, I'm like, yeah, this is probably why. And you, I think you hit the nail on the head, Pat. Like, it's 90210 Arrow.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think this is a show that for that channel, probably the most hard hitting. So if you didn't grow up an Arrow fan, you're probably going to like it because it stands out. It was a little darker compared to everything else they had. But, like, I don't know if you guys have read. If you haven't, it's a great read. The Kevin Smith written Green Arrows that came out about 3 years, 4 years ago for the Return of Green Arrow storyline. It was so dark and fantastic coming from, the death storyline from the Justice League space station that had to deal with the Green Lantern turn and everything. And knowing Oliver Queen and his relationship with Green Lantern all these years and sort of his rivalry and sort of hatred of Batman and favoring sort of Superman side in that team, you knew Oliver Queen enough from all these years that when you explore his young adulthood, he comes off as such a spoiled pretty boy that when he's tough, you don't buy it. So that was it for me. And I tried and tried. And it disappoints me that I don't like it. But if you haven't read the Kevin Smith Green Arrows and you like Arrow, man, you haven't seen anything until you read that. That's something you should go see.
I may have to go out and check that out. Pat, thanks for the call. And, if you're around, give us a buzz on Sunday when we do our summer movie show. And, we're going to add more comic book talk to the show. We definitely got to have you call back in. Thanks a lot for supporting us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Pop life. I love it. Have a good time, guys.
Thanks for calling. You know, I'm looking at some of these canceled shows, some of these renewed shows, and this whole CW thing I mentioned. I think really epitomizing the whole thing is that the Carrie Diaries was on the CW. Now, that's canceled. That is not coming back. But that's the kind of show that exemplified this bias that I'm just now really realizing.
Exactly. I'm having this, like, real... You know, and Pat, I was never an Arrow fan. I didn't read Green Arrow. But you know what? I have this... When I think of Green Arrow, one of the most vivid memories I have is in Dark Knight Returns, Green Arrow works with Batman when Batman fights Superman in the climactic scene at the end of the comic book. And Green Arrow, I'm trying to remember exactly why, but he had a severed arm. Okay. He only had one arm, but still using his mouth and his bow and arrow shoots a kryptonite arrow at Superman, weakening him so Batman could kick the hell out of him. And he's just this gruff, surly old man that's just like, yeah, sure, I'll F up Superman. And it's just kind of like, you know, maybe subconsciously in my head, seeing this pretty boy just wasn't resonating with this image I had in my subconscious of who Green Arrow is. And it's a shame because I do think if you put out quality, it's almost an insult to women. It's you know, if you put out quality entertainment, you know, there are, I hate to tell you, CW, there are, like, bright women out there that'll like something just because it's good.
Right.
But I feel like and he's right. You know, I remember watching the first episode, and they made it a point to show, Oliver Queen his workout. And they kept having these close-ups on his sweaty abs. And I was just like, all right, he's in tremendous shape, but...
We get it, right?
You know, and it's now again. I'm glad we had this talk because now I know why I didn't like Arrow.
Right. Well, let me throw another couple of names out at you since we were talking about the upfronts and shows that are returning, not returning. I'm surprised that Two and a Half Men is coming back for another season. I can't believe. I know it's popular, but with the old turnover, I'm surprised that one is coming back. On the flip side, I'm very happy that the Mindy Project is coming back. That is a show that was on the bubble that didn't have the audience, especially after it returned after a hiatus. But I think is one of the funniest shows on TV. Real ensemble. Everybody is funny, but not in a, you know, hey, look, we're funny way. They're just great characters, great writing. I'm surprised, I think, at this point that American Idol is returning. I think they might want to let that one die already, which they are doing with The X Factor. Also not coming back, The Neighbors, which I watched one episode of and said, this is not going to last. And, well, it made it two seasons. That's great, which is too bad. I actually, someone I know was the creator of that show, and I wanted to give it a shot. Hey, America's Funniest Home Videos is still on the air. I didn't know that.
When is it on?
I think it's still Sundays, right? Like the 7 o'clock slot on Sunday, I think. Anyway, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a favorite of us here at Pop Life, is returning, but in a very interesting time slot. Like I said, the Mindy Project is returning. So is New Girl, which, you know, that one I'm a little bit surprised about, is making it to another season. The other sitcom from that night on Fox is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, no longer a midweek show. It is coming back to Sunday nights, and as most of you would know, that is Animation Night on Fox. And what they have, at least at this point, is The Simpsons at 8, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then Family Guy at 9 o'clock. I don't know how that is going to fit into that slot, how it'll do. This is a show that not only was hilarious, but actually had some success winning Golden Globes. Your thoughts, Ken?
It is weird seeing a show that won awards to get bumped out of its time slot moving elsewhere. I think we can predict that there's going to be a very special animated episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine at some point next season, if this is, in fact, where it'll stay the whole season. It's weird. I mean, it's a weird spot to put it in. You know, to me, it's never a good sign when a show is getting moved.
Right.
You know, it's up in the air. It's very difficult for me to predict. It could be something that, because it's Sunday night, that they play out strong and they solidly win their time slot with even though they're animated, with a solid lead in and show after, and they've garnered a certain following that they just win their time slot on Sunday nights.
And there must be the research there that says the audience for The Simpsons and Family Guy is similar to that of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm sure they did their homework, and it's a move to Sunday. It's not the Neighbors was moved to Friday this season, and so you didn't expect it was going to last another one. Sunday is a good place to be, but Sunday on Fox, it's set with what it is, kind of like NBC and its Thursday night comedy lineup, which, by the way, is being given the death knell this coming season. Parks and Recreation is returning, but I guess will be in a different time slot when it comes back. Like I said, Community is done and The Office has ended, and they are actually making an interesting move by bringing two new sitcoms into that into 9 o'clock on Thursdays, in between The Biggest Loser and Parenthood. But then they are moving The Blacklist, not just moving it for the season, but for half of its season. The Blacklist, which is a show we also both love, is returning on Mondays, and it'll take a break in November and then come back to Thursdays in the winter, in February. I don't know if that is just a bad idea and a drop in audience waiting to happen.
It's weird because, again, a successful show that they brought back, like, why? And you're planning on moving. You're not looking at it now and saying, you know, well, let's see how the ratings go, and then if we have to move it around mid-season. I mean, they're planning right now, regardless of what goes on. It's being moved. And it's interesting when you look at that because, I mean, you talk about Thursday night comedies. I mean, for us, you know, it seems like NBC – forever. I mean, I go back and you know, interesting going back. I mean, I just watched. I love Netflix streaming and all the stuff that's out there right now. But I just watched the classic episode "A My Name Is Alex" from Family Ties. And if you haven't seen that episode, it's entitled "A My Name Is Alex." Go watch it. It's a two-parter. It's amazing. But it still holds up, which made me very happy because I still am scarred from watching The Outsiders as an adult. But I digress. But going back, where you had, you know, Cosby Show and Family Ties and
Cheers,
Night Court, right. Seinfeld, Friends, you know, later on The Office. I mean, it was just you can go back. I mean, I'm missing a bunch, but it was like Thursday night was the night for comedy on NBC. And it was amazing to watch how it evolved, how, you know, they had – it probably would look at starting it with The Cosby Show. And, like, right. The Cosby Show, and they put something next to The Cosby Show to help sell that show, and then as time would go on, it's like, and, you know, Cheers was strong, and let's put something next to Cheers.
Right.
And it just, that was like, they just kept rotating, like, whoever was the strong one, you know, let's put, like, the new show next to the strong one, and let's get that show off the ground. And it was just, Thursday Night Comedies was a staple on NBC. It's kind of sad to see that, you know, that's coming to an end.
Yeah, when they said must-see TV, they, you know, that really meant something. Everybody was watching. And like you said, you know, there were failures. The 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock shows were always the superstars. And what came in between, you know, there were certainly some forgettable ones, some shows that I liked that didn't make it. But, you know, the shows that you mentioned, the ones in the 80s, really brought comedy back, not just for NBC, but we're talking about Cheers, The Cosby Show. They brought comedy back from, you know, the brink of death on television. Then you got into where comedy was popular, and NBC revolutionized it again with Friends. I mean, first Seinfeld. Seinfeld was not workplace-based, and it was not family-based. It was just a bunch of people hanging out. Friends took it and you know, aged them down a little bit, and that really revolutionized the sitcom. And then, you know, they lost their audience, but they maintained their critical accolades with shows like The Office and Parks and Recreation. And it's sad, it's surprising in some ways, but not in others, because they have not had the audience. And I know networks try to program a comedy block, but usually it's an hour. It's not an entire night of television anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. But I think you're looking at it NBC, but you're also looking at it across the board. And you know, growing up as kids, like we, you know, there's a ton of sitcoms everywhere.
Right.
You know, not that it's going to be completely gone, but we've looked over the past few years at the demise of the sitcom.
Yeah, you know, looking at what's on the schedule for the fall, and again, this is a partial schedule I'm looking at, ABC, Fox, and NBC, but I see a couple of blocks. You know, without knowing what these new shows are, you can pretty much assume, if you're looking at 2 half-hours in a row, that's your network's sitcom block for the night. And it's not nearly as many as we had when we were kids. ABC is one of the exceptions. Wednesday nights, they are maintaining the two-hour sitcom block, and that's something that has gone away that we were used to when we were younger. The Middle, The Goldbergs, and Modern Family, and then a new show called Blackish, which it's, you know, there's that Netflix show Orange is the New Black. It seems to me that Black is the New Black as far as naming shows these days. I'm a big fan of Orphan Black, which is on BBC America, and I don't want to go off point here, but I'm going to have to talk about that at some point. But ABC is maintaining that sitcom block for a couple of hours. You just don't see that anywhere else on the schedule anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, you know, but maybe like anything, I mean, we're going through a phase now, and maybe we'll see a resurgence down the road a piece. I mean, you know, it's something, it seems like over the past few years, and maybe that's part of the demise of the sitcom, that, you know, my opinion, you know, we've seen, you know, reality TV is still there, but that has slowly, you know, decreased how many reality shows are out there.
Or at least on network.
Yes. And I feel like what happened was, which is great, it's great for TV that you got some good writers out there that decided we're gonna create compelling drama. We're going to write compelling drama. You don't have to see reality TV to see compelling drama.
Right.
And there was this influx of shows that were just in, like, this year, The Blacklist, and, you know, shows on FX like Justified and Sons of Anarchy, Breaking Bad, you know, shows that have really kind of just kind of grab you by the cojones, dramas, where now it seems like it's a copycat thing. It's like, all right, you know, dramas seem to be the direction of television, and consequently, if dramas are going to be the thing that networks are going to bank on, sitcoms are going to be the ones that are going to kind of fall by the wayside.
Oh, now that you've put me on point, I've got to mention Orphan Black again. Now that we're talking about great drama, you went to cable. I've got to say, I binge-watched season one, 10 seasons of it, leading up to the premiere of the second season. This show has amazed me. The show, the premise itself, and the acting. And for those of you who are not aware, this is a show about clones. There is the main character, Sarah. She has discovered, she discovers very early on that she is one of a number of clones out there who have, some of them have been in touch, some of them are getting more in touch with each other, trying to figure out what's going on, where they're from. Of course, they're being hunted. You've got this one actress, Tatiana Maslany. She is playing, at this point, eight characters. Sometimes three of them in a scene with one another seamlessly. They all have such different looks and personalities, and she's just done them all in such a great way. In fact, in some cases, she plays one character impersonating another character, and she does that perfectly. And the show has been great. So, you know, you've got, at one point, she was impersonating a police officer. The police are investigating. Then you've got two warring sides going at it. One is more religious. One is very scientific. This show has blown me away. Week after week, can't wait. It's on Saturday night, so it's usually a DVR thing, but can't wait to catch that every week.
I'm gonna have to check that out. Some good sci-fi type action. Always a big fan of the sci-fi. So you know, so many. You know, it's amazing. We do this show once a month, and you know, so much news that pops up in the realm of pop culture, and over the course of the next, you know, year plus, there's going to be so much to talk about. But the one thing that's happened since the last show that got me all a flutter was hearing the news: Star Wars coming back, Episode 7, and we are going to have Leia, Han, Luke, Chewie, R2, and C-3PO. At least right now, that's what we're looking at. You know, there might be other signings going forward. I thought it was interesting that Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian was not on the list. But who knows, maybe down the road a piece. And, you know, that just, I was all a flutter. I found myself walking through the hallways at work just, Star Wars, if they should, Bar Wars. And just, I was just excited. It was like my childhood coming back. Now they just got to give us a good script and a good movie, but that's got me pretty pumped.
You know, I actually have a thought on the plot, the script, because they made another announcement, and I'm excited about everybody coming back. Oh, absolutely. The other big announcement a couple of weeks ago was that everything that has been written in the expanded universe, and for those of you not familiar with the Star Wars speak, we're talking about everything in comic books, novels, video games, movies, TV shows. It has all been for, 35 years, whatever we're talking about? It's all been approved by George Lucas. It all works together. There is a continuity. And an announcement was made that going forward, the only things that are canon are episodes 1-6 and the Clone Wars Cartoon Network series. It took a lot of us by surprise. And the thing that I took out of that, of the little glimmer of hope, was maybe they've written a story that is so good that even though it goes against some of what is out there in the expanded universe, it was just too good not to make. And I'm hoping that that is the case.
Fingers crossed, man. Yeah, because it was almost like, we're doing a new Star Wars movie, got all the original cast, and like everyone's like debating, oh, where could they be going, and what could this movie be, and blah. And then it's just like Disney announces, oh, by the way, do over.
Right.
None of that counts. And it definitely would kind of blindsided you. But I'm still going to try and remain optimistic. I like your theory. I think that's a good theory to have. The one thing that actually I really wondered about with this movie is, now let's face it, We're about the same age. Return of the Jedi.
Right.
The gold bikini.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably for a lot of guys our age that first time that you kind of felt a little funny, but you didn't know exactly what was happening in your body. The gold bikini. You know, it's ladies out there, you want to woo your men. If your men are, you know, around the age we are, and I'm not going to tell you how old, if you're around late 30s, early 40s, even older, you want your man to do anything for you,
Gold bikini.
Gold bikini. Just show up in bed one night wearing the gold bikini, and he'll be yours.
Now, listen, Ken. We are not going to see Carrie Fisher in a gold bikini.
Well, that was the point I was trying to make.
Right.
That, like, now, you know, there's a couple things. Like, look, Mark Hamill is a reasonable facsimile of what Luke Skywalker was. He's an aged Luke Skywalker. Harrison Ford, the same thing. He is an aged. He's a good-looking older guy, you know, optimistic. But, like, wow, Carrie Fisher, years have not been kind, and the voice, years of abuse. I mean, you know, I'm like, is there something they can do? I'm waiting for her to, you know, the movie to open up and, you know, to go into Han and Leia's house and, Han, did you check on the kids? And just, you know, like, wait, you know, she's got to have a softer voice. So that made me really curious because the years have not been kind to her, and what the character Princess Leia, how large a role she will have and what they're going to do with
her. How large a role she'll have. Listen, I'm not one to start stirring things up about women and body image. You know, I certainly understand the issues that are out there. I did see a headline. I didn't read the story, but I saw a headline yesterday that said Carrie Fisher has lost 40 pounds in anticipation of this role. Now, I don't know that 40 pounds is going to put her back in gold bikini, you know, shape. However, that's out there. She does, you know, want to present Princess Leia as, you know, something that could be 30 years later. Here she is. You know, I don't know that they're going to maybe dub a voice Darth Vader style. That would be disappointing, you know, to James Earl Jones. And, of course, James Earl Jones might be an improvement on Carrie Fisher's voice at this point. There have been some other actors announced as well, and I bring this up. One of them is Adam Driver, who I don't know a lot about, and that's mostly because he's on Girls on HBO, and so therefore I don't need to know a lot about him at this point. Another one, though, is Andy Serkis. Talk about people who are, you know, kind of special effects. This guy, I'm assuming, just because of what he's done before, he may not actually show up on screen as Andy Serkis. We're talking about Star Wars. We're talking about a special effects universe here. This is the guy who made Gollum who he was with motion capture. And then he ended up being King Kong, and he was in the Planet of the Apes, and you never actually see him on screen. He's done cartoon voiceovers. So I wonder what they're going to do with this actor on the movie.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of interesting casting, and they cast Jesus.
Jesus?
Max von... We've debated like the pronunciation of his last name. What is this? Cedo.
I think that's what we came up with.
I think we looked up Cedo, Max von Cedo, who played Jesus in The Greatest Story Ever Told, who is 85 years old, is going to be in this. Again, we don't know what roles these actors are going to be playing, but you know, Max, very good actor, so intriguing. I you know, he screams Dark Side of the Force, you know, when I think of him, which is amazing that he played Jesus.
Well, there are rumors, you know, take the rumors with a grain of salt, because there were rumors about the title of the episode, which were, you know, discredited. The rumor had been that Adam Driver will be one of the main villains, possibly in the expanded universe world, Han and Leia's son, who was turned a little bit evil. Now what I hear is it may not be Adam Driver, but it may be Max von Sydow, who is the head baddie at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. And, you know, the one thing, you know, they're saying we're not using the expanded universe, but the one thing that they did in the comic books, and spoiler alert, they killed off Chewbacca. And that's something that deserves life on the big screen. I think that's a story to be told. I think it's time, honestly, with how long the story has gone, for one of these major significant characters to wind up having an on-screen death.
That's not going to be R2, you know, so maybe it'll be Chewie. not that the expanded universe is gone. It's just it doesn't have to be adhered to. So we'll see if some of these stories we know well will be continued. Ken, great show as usual.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, we hit a lot of subject matters. We definitely got to get on the comic book thing a lot more. Like, that was cool talking about that. Remember, this Sunday we'll be back talking about the summer movie season. Lots of great movies coming out Sunday at 7 o'clock. You got to tune in right here at KenReedyShow.com. Give us a call. Let's talk movies on Sunday. But I had a real good time. Before, you know, we got about 20 seconds left. Like, are you psyched about this year's movie season?
I'm very excited. You know, I've been watching trailers. I can't wait to see X-Men. I can't wait, hopefully, to get out and see Spider-Man.
There's so many. I just get Godzilla out this weekend, so if I can, maybe I'll see it before Sunday. Who knows?
Nice.
See you Sunday for Todd. I am Ken. Thank you all for tuning in. Good night.